It is day two of the Virginia Film Festival. This is Sean McCord in Filmmaker Central, the Filmmaker's Lounge in the Whiskey Jar. And I'm sitting across from Dr. Susan Crate, but you said I can call you Susie.
Yeah.
You are the anthropologist in the film called The Anthropologist, which screens tonight, Friday at 6 p.m. in the Dickinson Center at PVCC. You are an anthropologist.
Yes.
And the filmmakers approached you and wanted, well, you know what, don't let me tell a story. You tell a story.
Sure. 2008, Ironbound Films approached me. They wanted to do a documentary about climate change that showed real people being affected.
Yeah.
And so they came to northeastern Siberia, where I've worked since 1991, to understand how Vilui Saha, some people in the Arctic who are horse and cattle breeders, are being affected. And this is an area of the world where there's continuous permafrost, and that permafrost, which is under the soil, solid ice foundation of the land, is warming and degrading, and how that's changing the landscape on top of the change of precipitation patterns, which is bringing much more rain and snow and ending up with a lot more water on the land.
So Siberia is, I mean, we think of that as about being about as remote as it can be. And the area itself is not industrialized.
Well, in the Soviet period, it was.
Okay,
Across the Soviet Union, they tried to develop whatever industry they could. And in this area, this is where 95% of Russia's diamonds come from.
Oh, I see.
And in the Soviet period, there were no environmental controls, and it really also affected communities who depended on the water system because of the pollution and other issues. But it is, you're right, it's a very distant place. But I think it's, you know, true that our entire Earth is populated by people,
yeah,
to some extent.
Oh, yes. And so tell me about the indigenous people in northern Siberia. What is their culture like, and how is this damage to the permafrost affecting their life?
Well, there are many indigenous groups in northern Russia. The Saha are a Turkic-speaking group, and they brought their ancestors many centuries ago brought horse and cattle breeding to this northern area. And they depend on hay fields for their animals to put them through the long winter. They harvest hay. So the hay fields, as I mentioned already, are inundated with water, making it much more difficult to harvest the hay. And then, as I already mentioned also, the precipitation patterns, huge amounts of snow in the winter, huge floods in the spring, etc.
So the filmmakers approached you because you were known for your work in this area.
Yeah, they contacted my program officer at NSF, Arctic Social Science, Anna Krutula, who's my main funding source so far, and she recommended me.
And you're based out of George Mason University.
Yes.
In Virginia.
Fairfax.
And, in Fairfax. And then you said at one point your daughter joined you.
Yes, when they came to Siberia in 2010 to shoot the footage there, they met my daughter, whose father is from my research field.
Oh, all right.
And they thought, wow, so here's this young girl, at the time she was 13, who's one half of her family is from this affected area of the world, and she's growing up in metropolitan D.C. Wouldn't it be interesting to have her in this story also, and the extent to which that would also interest younger people, which is critical in terms of getting an understanding, a realistic understanding of how climate change is affecting our globe.
The film is The Anthropologist, screens tonight, Friday at 6 p.m., at the Dickinson Center at PVCC. I'm talking with... I'm getting a correction.
No corrections. I just wanted to make sure that we told people, too...
Yes. Oh, we're not done now. I was just reminding them who I'm talking to.
Are you going to edit this?
We'll work on that.
It's okay.
I'm talking to Dr. Susie Crate, who was bursting to tell me something.
Oh, yes. Well, so after Siberia, we decided we'd go to understand how inhabitants of low-level islands in the South Pacific. Exactly. We went to the island atoll of Kiribati, the nation of Kiribati, which is over 30 small islands clustered together.
One of those island nations that are fighting in sea level rising.
Yes. They're actually starting to relocate. They've purchased some land on Fiji. Before they got that land on Fiji, they were going piecemeal to New Zealand and Australia and other areas. But now they've decided they need to relocate with pride as a culture. And so then we went to Peru, the Peruvian. The Andes are the world's second largest glacial mass next to the Himalayas. And water is critical not only to the people in the mountains, but the low-lying regions, the entire coast where Lima, the capital, all that water is from the glaciers. And they are one of the scientists we talked to there said by 2030, all the water will be gone.
Oh, that's astonishing.
Yeah, but our work was with the people there being affected. And we also went to the Chesapeake Bay and talked to watermen who are also affected by sea level rise. They talk about how they used to catch tons of lobster off the coast of Virginia in their lifetime. They remember that. They talk about the thickness of the ice that they don't see anymore. So it's not just a film about other places in the world. It brings it home in a literal sense.
So you're a scientist and an academic. Did you, when you got into this field, did you imagine that these issues about climate change and water level rise would become such a political hot point? And how do you deal with that in your life when this is your field? You know, do you encounter people who are skeptical about the change that you are seeing?
Of course. I personally don't waste my time with them.
Okay.
Because I know why they're skeptical. There's two reasons, let's say. I give them the benefit of the doubt that, you know, in order to really get climate change, you have to experience it.
You have to see it.
And we don't see much of it here. We're starting to, if you pay attention. If you're a gardener, et cetera,
right.
You're noticing things are changing.
Right.
But for the most part, the denial that we're facing in this country is due to the fact that fossil fuels are the main culprit. And the fossil fuel industry is, as we know from what's going on in North Dakota, et cetera, huge.
Right.
And so I don't waste my time because personally, if I can put the energy that I put into those people who are not going to listen to me anyway, if I can put that energy into students and to people who will listen and understand that I've been there, I've seen it, I know it's going on, let's do something, I will do that. Because, you know, I'm not like Henny Penny. I'm not going to tell you, you know, don't do anything but fight this thing.
Yeah.
Because we need to live our lives. But it is an urgent issue. We need to vote correctly in this election. We need a president who knows and identifies that climate change is happening and takes us to the next level.
So this film, The Anthropologist, and you are the anthropologist in the film, screens tonight at 6 at the Dickinson Center. Have you been on the festival tour with this? Have you been to other screenings? What kind of reactions have you been getting?
Oh, yeah. I've been to about 25 screenings. Whether it's film festivals or universities that contact me and have me come, excellent responses.
And you've been getting discussions
excellent
afterwards
responses.
From people.
It's a documentary. I've been telling people this because it's true. A lot of documentaries just kind of put it all out in front of you and tell you.
Yeah.
Right? This is much more interpretive. It's much more about. It's much more like storytelling. And I feel like that's a more effective way to educate people because people are able to grasp from storytelling what they're ready to hear at that moment in time. We've had enough of the Al Gore talk.
Yeah.
Obviously, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
We need to see real people. We need to see real people who are thriving but also extremely challenged by this issue.
In addition to the real people, indigenous people being affected by this, another anthropologist that many of us who aren't in the world of anthropology, you've heard of Margaret Mead, is in this film. How did that come about?
That came about later in the process of making the film. because Margaret Mead's daughter, Catherine Bateson, wrote a book about her parents. Gregory Bateson was her father, also a very famous anthropologist. And they started thinking about this mother-daughter relationship and this whole kind of process of inheriting the family business, the extent to which my Katie is also very interested now in anthropology, even though she won't say it. I mean, she's kind of skates around it a little bit. You know, she, international and global issues, indigenous rights, you know. It's all there.
Yeah.
So she's on her sixth language now. She's learning.
Wow.
She's a polyglot. So
good for her. Good
but
for you.
That's why they brought it in. But also to show that anthropologists have always looked at how cultures are affected and responding to and adapting to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that what kind of change they look at itself has transformed over time. Margaret Mead looked at how cultures were being affected by, you know, colonization and other groups coming in and affecting them. You know, these more, at the time, thinking of them as these more primitive Stone Age cultures who were then being affected by modernity. And anthropologists look at a lot of things these days. Environmental anthropology looks at interactions and effect, how they're affected by climate change. So there's a lot of parallels, or let's say a lot of trajectories, a lot of layers to the documentary.
Yeah.
And that might be confusing for some people, but as I already said, it's all about storytelling. So please come.
Absolutely. It's serious, important information. The Anthropologist screens tonight, Friday, 6 p.m. at Dickinson Center, talking to Susie Crate, the anthropologist of the film. Thank you so much for coming by.
You're welcome.